Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters, and maybe a Twisted Mister or two. One never knows. Hey, Pam, how are you tonight?
Oh, I am doing great. How are you doing?
If I was any better, I'd be twins.
Awesome thought. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, so how goes it? How goes the show? What do you got going on tonight?
Well, for tonight, we kind of have a mix and match, a hodgepodge show. Naomi and I realized that we had both had carryovers from two different shows. Hers from when she did her door artwork of various different outdoors and me from paper cutting art. And we didn't have quite enough to make a full show. At least we weren't quite sure we did. So I ran an 8 spots only contest where people had to write it to be inspired by this one single quote. Among the delights of summer were picnics to the woods by Georg Brandes. And yeah, well, I really liked that quote. And I thought, you know what? It really is the perfect time of year to be inspired by a quote or even just by the idea of summer picnics or summer joys.
Right, right. That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So definitely a wonderful lineup of poetry tonight. We're going to take them one subject at a time in order. Because, you know, obviously the older the carryovers are, we want to get them done first. So, you know.
Absolutely. There you go.
Makes sense to me anyways.
Right.
And, yeah, yeah. So, but, yeah, beautiful day today. Went this morning, me and my daughter, we went for a walk with one of the little dogs. The one little dog, she loves going for walks. She is eager to please. She'll be out there walking with you. The other one basically acts like you're trying to kill him. It's like dragging a sack of flour.
Oh, my gosh. She's funny.
Yeah.
Well, it's good you're having some nice weather, you know. I mean,
yeah.
I always joke with you the weather there, but I'm sure you have some good days throughout every year or so, and I'm glad you're done.
Yeah.
We have some amazing happening here. Yeah. It's not too hot, not too cold here. You know, we've had a couple really hot days, but, you know, not horrendous.
Yep.
So, you know, I like that. I like that.
Me too.
So,
me too.
Just so you know, Naomi, we do miss you tonight, but I hope you enjoy your visit with your family. It's an unexpected visit tonight. So, yeah, you're all stuck with just me and Pam. Pam's not so bad. You guys are used to her, but you know, you're stuck with me again.
I'll do the singing and dancing, and you tell the jokes, and we'll keep them entertained.
There you go. We'll be fine then. I can do jokes.
It'll be like, what do they call those shows, like vaudeville shows?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
no burlesque.
Like
well, you can do burlesque. Nobody will see it, so it'll be okay. You can't get in trouble for that, right? Oh, my God. That's funny.
It's nice that Naomi has family surprising her, and I... You know, so like I said, we'll miss her, but it's good she gets her time with family. Yeah.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree. So anyone who wants to call in and lend poor Pam a hand, you know, feel free to do so. I don't need to be rescued from Pam,
definitely.
But Pam might need you from me. But everyone is welcome to give us a call. Anyway, I'm done with my spiel for the evening. So whatever you want to do, Pam, you do. I'm sorry?
Oh, I said we definitely would not turn down an extra voice. That's for sure.
Absolutely not. Not at all. So I'm going to let you run direct me as what the hell we're doing because I have no idea.
Sure.
It
worked for me. All right. Well, like I usually like to do on Tuesdays, I do have a classic poem to start out with. So we have A Door Just Opened on a Street by Emily Dickinson. And Jean, will you go ahead and give that a read for us, please?
Oh, my gosh, it's just my size.
That's what
okay.
I figured.
A Door Just Opened on a Street. A door just opened on a street by Emily Dickinson. A door just opened on a street. I lost, was passing by. An instant's width of warmth disclosed and wealth and company. The door is sudden shut and I lost, was passing by. lust out doubly, but by contrast most, informing misery. And poem.
Wonderful read there. And, you know, I don't usually choose smaller classic poems, but this one fit with the topic of the door art. I figured, you know, because I was looking at we had three different topics, and I could have found one on summer picnics. But I thought, you know what, I like this poem. I like Emily Dickinson. You know, part of the reason I like throwing in a classic poem into the beginning of Tuesday's show is because not only does it give us an opportunity to know poets that we haven't heard before, but you get to, you know, re-know old classics. I mean, you know, and Emily Dickinson is just an all-time favorite. And then I figured, well, since it's just me and you, and that's a gene-sized poem, well, of course, you know, you're going to have to read it. So, but, yeah, I've always enjoyed Emily Dickinson's style. I like how it's deceptively simple. You know, like you see this as just the idea of a door opening and closing, but you see it for its potential for so much more, for a metaphor of opportunity given and then lost within that moment of hesitation, at least for me. And Jean, you did a beautiful read of that. Your thoughts?
You know, I think it was a great poem to start the show with. I mean, it was between the door just opened on a street, you know, and then the little tidbits that she put in under that, you know, that fed into that one line. And then the door is sudden shut. It's all within the blink of an eye, pretty much, that all this seems to take place. There's not a whole lot to it, you know. It's space-wise, you know. And I think that it was a great choice for tonight, absolutely. I would say well done, but I think she knows that by now. it was a great choice for the show tonight. So nice one. Nice one, Pam.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I do the same thing with classic poems. There's all these dead poets, and I'm always saying things like, very well done or nicely written, you know. And I just picture them, like, you know, peeking over the cloud, looking down at us doing our show and going, what are they saying now about our poems?
Yep. Look, you're using that one. I like it. Yeah. I always wondered if I did a good job with that. Yeah, I can get it now. That always was one.
Yeah, unless it's an after midnight show. If it's an after midnight show, they're just all going, oh, geez, they're using Bukowski again. Well, geez.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That is funny. Absolutely. Oh, my goodness.
Yep.
My gosh.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it's just fun. It's fun to use your imagination, that's for sure. All right. Well, like I said, our first few rights will be from Naomi's Doors contest. And we have up next, Beyond Closed Doors by S. Sharp, and it goes like this. The other side, an altar where warm winds rise in the hands of hope portal, whirlpool whirring of the world's hidden truth, where thoughts from all of time exist at once as scatter and spoken in tongues, where transcendence seeps through to the other side, through a fisheye lens, actualization wrought from the hammer of subconscious thought meaning bleeds. Through hinged and closed doors of conscious thought, depths of the wells of darkness brought into the light from possibility to reality. End poem. And wonderful, wonderful right there by S. Sharp. your thoughts, Phil?
Yeah, I think that Scott did a great job with this piece. I like how it's the doors of your mind, you know. You know, from thought to thought, in all those areas. So it was very, very clever and a nice take on the concept of the contest. I did not see any specific image that this was aimed toward, but I think he did a great job with just the doorway, you know, that doorway concept. And it was just nicely written, Scott, and a wonderful job. Really, really nice work.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I like how you bring on the idea of that it's about the doorway into the mind. And I have to agree, while there isn't put in there an exact prompt, he did very well with just simply writing to the theme and writing to the theme in a different way, you know, like rather than just a physical door, a metaphorical door. I thought it was really cool. I was looking at his AN where he put scatterance, a made-up word to describe the existence of all thoughts from all time, all in one place. And I thought that was really cool, you know, because I think it's, as poets, I know like Dr. Seuss made up words. There were other, I can't remember who else, but I know there was someone else who was famous for making words up. And I think that's really, you know, kind of fun to do. You know, I don't necessarily think we should go willy-nilly with it, my own personal opinion, but I like that word scattering. Now, sometimes, you know, when I comment on poems, especially during the show, I'll leave really short comments in the first thought that came to mind. So I had written A Wonderful Dark Ride on Being Trapped in a Cult. Very well done. And there was, I admit, now, rereading this again out loud on the show and listening to your comment, I do see this in a more positive light as, you know, the idea of, you know, that going into one's own subconscious, you know, going on that journey, that voyage into the mind. But there were certain lines in here that I won't take away completely what I said before, because there are certain lines, like the scattering spoken in tongues, wrought from the hammer of subconscious, thought bleeds, meaning bleeds through the hinge and closed doors of conscious thought. You know, to me, and I like I said, I tend to oftentimes just comment with my first instinct oftentimes when I have to make a quick comment. There was something about this that felt like behind closed doors, not being able to think for yourself. And even a fisheye lens is a very limited view. And so between the ideas of the closed doors and the limited view, and there was something to me that spoke to me about the darkness of this, right, and how it almost seemed to be this idea of being trapped and having your worldview limited. And when I think of, like, having your worldview limited, I do think of a cult. So, you know, but as always, I'm always impressed with Scott Sharp's writing. And but those were my thoughts that came to mind. So wonderful there. And go ahead and grab the next one. I don't know, Dean. They must all be listening in thinking that we're so riveting. They can't possibly do any better than us.
Well, stranger things have been said.
All right. Up next,
I wonder
who's
going to get to read the next one.
Yeah, I wonder who's going to read this one. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. All right.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and Up next, we have Open Doors by Rosewinter 515 and Jean. Will you give that a read for us, please?
Might be taxing on me.
Yeah, right.
Open Doors by Rosewinter 515. Hazab C. welcomes Tori. Relaxation in warm water. Beachside Hotel Brilliant. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Jean. Well, you go ahead and you take that well-deserved drink of water that you need. And I see that in her AN, she did put that, you know, that this is not a 757 structure. It is a 787. But I like that. You know, I like the brevity that has a structure that's similar to a haiku, but not exactly, you know. I think she said a lot. Now, I was Googling the Azov Sea is actually near the Ukraine. So, and to me, once you know that the Azov Sea is near the Ukraine where the war is happening right now, it really changes the tone of this. It's interesting, right? Because it's such a warm and inviting brevity, you know, the welcoming of tourists, the relaxing in warm water, the hotel brilliance by the beachside, and then the whole tone kind of changes, and the idea of this is what all of this could be if we weren't dealing with war and violence and atrocities at this moment. These are the doors that could be opened if they hadn't been slammed shut by greed. So just really a wonderful brevity and very well done. And your thoughts, Jean?
I don't know. It's an awful lot for you to expect me to read all these poems and still have thoughts. But I think...
Oh, no.
I think this is a really... well done piece. I mean, she describes prompt number 39 as sunflowers on door and a clock above the door. You know, and that doesn't kind of gives me a concept of a beachy hotel kind of thing, you know, although a little more casual than what, you know, I would normally think in my mind. But it is warm and welcoming and inviting by sound. And the fact that it is up by Ukraine, it is kind of an interesting addition to this. Excuse me. You know, perhaps just a place of retreat or respite from what's going on in other areas of Ukraine. And I don't know for sure because I am geographically challenged, and I admit that from the minute I wake up in the morning. But I think that it was beautifully done. And I believe we have a caller. It looks like maybe Thomas B. So let me pick him up.
Oh, wonderful.
Hello, Thomas.
Hello. How are you all this evening?
Doing well. How are you?
Hi, Tom.
Good to hear from you.
My son will fighting off a bad cold. Day two.
Oh, jeez. It's a time of year for those darn commercials. Absolutely. Well, it's good to have you with us.
Yeah, glad you could join us.
Well, my pleasure.
But yeah, as I was saying, Pam, I think it's very nicely written. And, just a very relaxing kind of the thoughts in the poem are soothing. That's a good word for it. It's soothing. So nice job, Rosewinter 515, and thanks for sharing with us all.
Absolutely. And I have to agree, soothing is a perfect word to describe that. So, and Tom, you are just in time for me to put you to work. I have put up Imagination by Quiet Wolf. And will you please give that a read for us?
Okay, here we go. Nice treat. Imagination by Quiet Wolf. Rambunctious kid by the heat of the day. Mom provides lemonade. Neighbor, the chocolate chip cookie. Little boys and girls play house, but not spouse. Clean up duties, wash the dishes, sweep with old-fashioned brooms, take out the trash. Bonfire, floors, bath time, show little ones tucked in. What's in store tomorrow? Another adventure.
Wonderful read there. Wonderful read, Tom. I really enjoyed this all the way through. You know, this is one of those writes that makes you smile. I love that he starts out with the word rambunctious, because to me, kids should have energy. You know, kids weren't meant to sit still all day long. They're meant to run around and make noise. And, you know, there are certain types of outdoor toys and activities that just bring back wonderful childhood memories. You know, like we had, when I was a kid, we had a tire swing tied to a tall, big oak tree. And our father had made us a teepee out of some old canvas. And, I mean, it was just, you know, and I had a rope ladder, it's just kind of those kind of fun outdoor activities. There's a real sense of joy. I like, though, that he reminds us that kids were still expected to understand the responsibilities of adulthood. And, you know, just a wonderful right on childhood adventures and joys and, you know, the connection that families could come to have when spending time outdoors in the evening. And, Tom, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, I like the way, I agree with you, I like the way you opened it with a sense of energy and as a way of bringing the neighborhood together around the kids. I saw a lot of that growing up in they were suburban neighborhoods, but in another sense they were military neighborhoods, since most of the people who lived there were, you know, somehow either worked in the military or for the military, and everybody kind of took care of everybody else because you only had each other to depend on. And really, the only people who understood what you were going through were other people who were going through the same thing at different times, you know? Husband at sea or husband on, you know, dangerous duty, you never know, and kids get sick and all that kind of stuff. And it just, it has that, the opening, with mom provides lemonade, neighbor, the chocolate chip cookies and the milk, just made me feel that whole sense of neighborhood. And then the little kids playing house. It's amazing how hard it is to get a kid to do a chore, but somehow they'll do all of them while pretending that they're doing them. What's the difference? I forgot that. But it matches that really nicely. And, well, this was something that only happened when we went on camping trips or out to Nag's Head in the summertime, the bonfire in the evening, s'mores, bath times. Yeah, that struck home. I mean, it very quickly touches on and catches just the right hints of all different things that made up the adventure of growing up really nicely. So that by the time you get to that last line, another adventure, that sense of that kind of joyful living is very clear. It's very beautifully done.
It really is. And I like how you brought up the idea of the neighborhood connection. And yeah, I have to agree with you. And it is so true about kids. You know, they won't get chores done, but they're happy to play chores. So great comment there. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I thought this was a great piece. I love the image that was chosen in this. you know, every kid's dream, a little treehouse, you know. And I love the wonderful memories of youth that were penned here and the joys of innocence expressed in the piece were very well done. So great job, and thank you so much, Quiet Wolf.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there. All right. And up next we have A Purple Voice by Jack Blue Nine. And I'm Jackie, I don't know. And it goes like this. Through this purple door, weird idle pupils soar downward endlessly, like a genuine fantasy to another universe, fallen angels curse. Through this troubadour, Hecate will sweetly lure fairies to her jazzy dream, as hell of maple cream melts your mind away on a deadly day. Through that purple door, dreamy drunken witches roar, kind of like remorse for their incomplete discourse with the playful queen of eternal green. End poem. And this is such a creative writer. I know the exact one that he wrote to, because it was one I considered writing to. It was the one that had a picture of a purple door, and it said, a purple door means a witch lives here. So that's a great take on the prompt. So very cool there. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I thought it was a clever piece, and I do remember that prompt as well. As soon as you said that, I was like, yeah, I remember seeing that one. I think that it was really well put together, and I thought it was a great take on that with the that witch vibe for, you know, on the other side. And I think that he led into that beautifully. And I always love Jack's use of color because, you know, he does that all the time. In all of his poems, he has colors that he draws into it. And I think that somehow he does it so well. So I think it was great. And thank you so much for sharing with us, Jack. And I love that last stanza, you know. So, excellent job.
Yeah, that is a beautiful stanza. And you're right, he does have this way of weaving color into his poetry that always works beautifully. So great comment.
I have to say, this is the first.
Okay.
How he played his rhymes, played with both simple and slant rhyme, and the use of the first lines, the purple door, through this troubadour, through that purple floor, and as he goes through each iteration, the fantasy, dreaminess, the sense of magical madness, for lack of a better term, seems to increase, so that by the time you get to through that purple floor, dreamy drunken witches roar like remorse for their incomplete discourse with the patient queen of eternal green. He has got us totally caught up in the world he's creating, the fantasy and the vibrancy of the colors, the witches, the fairies, everything that's going on. It's a really nice use of energetic poetic language.
You're right. Yeah, energetic is a great way to describe this, especially with phrases like, you know, jazzy dream. And I like that he went with Hecate, or I'm probably mispronouncing slightly, but the Greek goddess. I know she was a Greek goddess, but I did have to look it up. But she says she's the goddess of boundaries, crossroads, witchcraft, the moon, necromancy, and ghosts. So I thought that was a great addition into the poem. I did like the energy of this. I like that he brings through this troubadour, Hecate will sweetly lure fairies to her jazzy dream as a hell of maple cream melts your mind away on the deadly day. It almost, makes you think of a more adult version of Hansel and Gretel. Like, if you could lure, if you were a witch luring adults into your home, what would you offer them? You know, jazzy dreams and maple cream. So I like it. I thought it was clever and it was creative and it was both dark and playful at the same time, which isn't easy to pull off, but he does it very well. So great comments, everybody. All right. And our next poem is The Spiritual Void by Namdad Somo. And Jean, would you give that a read for us, please?
I will give it a whirl. This is called The Spiritual Void by Namdad Somo. I don't know how to make you see the many ways that you are blind when it comes to seeing me, spinning me around the kitchen on less than 2 feet. I'm hidden within your gaze as you look through my being, as if I were nothing else but a spiritual void. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Jean. I have to say, I really like and admire Namdad's poetry. She oftentimes does hit on topics of a personal and spiritual nature. I really like how this is about realizing that you can't always get people to see your heart. That you, not everybody is going to understand you. I love the line that's practically in the center, spinning me, when it comes to seeing me, spinning me around the kitchen on less than 2 feet, I'm hidden within your gaze. There's something very provocative and thought-provoking, and I love the imagery of spinning around in the kitchen. But there definitely, to me, a sad tone to this, as if I were nothing else but a spiritual void. And it's almost like this idea, it feels like to me, and I could be wrong, but it feels like the idea of the point of view of a child, like you think of a child dancing on their father's feet, and but just this kind of emptiness of not feeling, you know, accepted for who you are, but just absolutely a beautiful and thoughtful brevity and very well done. And Tom, your thoughts?
I like some of the way that you entertained the idea of being a child. I mean, I find myself thinking. All the things that we have with us that we're sort of conscious of but unconscious of. And I'm 6 foot, so I get accused of not seeing her all the time. But the thing that I just like the way it opened, I don't know how to make you see that the many ways that you are blind when it comes to seeing me. Because children feel that way, has been, people feel that way about their partner. This sense of, you see what you want to see, what you like, but you don't see all of me. Just don't know. I like that. The way she suddenly brings it from a general statement to something more specific, you know, spinning me around the kitchen on less than 2 feet. Hidden within, or seen as if you look through my being, as if there's nothing else, spiritual void. It's very sad in a way to have somebody say that you see me, but you don't see me. You miss all that I am, as if I have nothing to give you. And And that just feels sad to me, because there's a sense of wisdom in those opening lines, as if they want so much to give more, to have to share, to be received as more, and yet they're disappearing. It's an interesting piece. I just but I have to step in for a while.
It really is. It really is. And you're right. There is that transition from a general statement to almost like a more personal. And definitely there is that sadness, that almost, and then frustration, I think, works well too. Frustration trying to get somebody to understand you and see you as more. So,
yeah.
Excellent comment, Tom. And Dean, you read that beautifully. Your thoughts?
I think this was really a wonderful write. You know, getting others to see us, you know, and all that we have to offer, you know, our true worth, is not always a simple task. You know, they see who we are on the outside, but not necessarily that which we carry deep within ourselves. And I think that's what made it such a wonderful piece. And, you know, it's not that they see the bad in us or they don't see, you know, all the beauty of us. It's just that they see the silhouette. And what's inside, you know, they just kind of, I don't know, it just kind of gets lost, you know. Not that they don't love us any less or anything. It's just that, you know, it doesn't get acknowledged, you know. There's no namaste in that, you know what I mean? Because the spirit in me cannot acknowledge the spirit if I don't see it. So I think that, I think it was really a nice job. So thanks, Pam, for sharing with us.
And I really like how you said they only see the silhouette. I thought that was a great way to describe that, you know, how people only see that outline, that surface of us, rather than what's held within. Like, you know, so excellent comment there. All right. We will now be moving on to the next topic, which is the paper cutting art.
And for Pam's next magic trick.
Yeah, right? Watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat. All right.
Yep.
And up next, we have Blank Paper by Vijaya Vavilikolanu. And Tom, would you give that a read for us, please?
As long as I don't have to repeat, to repeat trying to pronounce her last name.
Her last name is Vavilikolanu.
Blank. I did the chapter. I will wither before I bloom. I fear I will break and won't matter. I fear I will end up crying in my room. Like blank paper, I will remain untouched, unwritten, unread. Like blank paper, I will remain dejected, despondent, distressed. Before emptiness fills my heart, let me carve my dreams, let me make my own designs and evolve with spit wings. With scissors, I will create an art to adapt all my glory. I will cut out the painful part and create own beautiful story.
Wonderful read there, Tom. And I will let you know that Vijaya, actually, I so butchered her name the last time I said it, that she was nice enough, and I really appreciate it. You know, she was so kind to private message me and spell it out, you know, like, you know, phonetically spell it out for me. And the only reason I was able to pronounce it so well is I actually had a notebook, like a regular paper notebook, where I had written out her name's pronunciation. But no, I tell people all the time, if you have a name that's, you know, different and I stumble over it, you know, please, you know, feel free to private message me and let me know. Because, and I greatly appreciate that. Yeah, exactly. Wonderful read there, Tom. And Jean, your thoughts on this poem?
Well, you know, I thought it was a wonderful take on the prompt, the art of paper cutting. It was well written and very clever. I mean, it goes in there, you know, at the beginning, it's kind of like, wow, you know, it's that. I fear that my dreams will shatter. I fear I will wither before I bloom. And then it goes on like blank paper, I will remain. And then, you know, in that last stanza, a resolution to that, you know, with scissors, I will create pen art to adapt all my glory. I thought that, actually, the next to last one is where it began. But just definitely a well-written piece and a clever take on that prompt, very much so. So nice work, Vijaya.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It truly was. Yeah. Great comment. And Tom, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, maybe this is almost like, you know, the first stanza, it's almost like darkness. The dreams will shatter. Either before I break into a mat, I'm crying in my room. It's all very dark. And then the second verse becomes almost like the dawn of a new day where you suddenly realize all these possibilities. And the last line is just the fear coming back before she suddenly finds her courage. And I love that, before the emptiness fills my heart, let me carve mine. And the minute you hit that, let me, it picks up on note. All of a sudden, art is going to create. Okay? You create. It's a story. It's a real kind of coming of age and awakening. It's kind of neat that you accomplish all that from blank paper and a short, quick four verses, you know, four lines, four verse poem. She does a beautiful job of it.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I like how it does make a big impact with only four lines per stanza. I have to agree with that. And I can really like the first stanza, particularly with the repetitiveness of I fear, I fear, I fear, I fear. It has a vulnerability to it. But I like even the title, Blank Paper. The idea, there's so much potential in blank paper. And then to realize that you have that potential, let me carve my dreams, let me make my own designs. I like that you call it a coming of age, right? Because I have to agree with that. There's a real sense of owning up to yourself, of realizing that nobody but you is in charge of your happiness, your dreams. You know, I thought, you know, I really like that she brought in the scissors. With scissors, I will create an art to adapt all my glory. I will cut the painful part and create my own beautiful story. You know, the idea that art being made from the cuts made, you know, metaphorically, I think was just such a beautiful thought. And there really was a wonderful sense of growth in this. So, excellent right. All right. And let's see what we have next. We have Paper Doll by Ilex Adder. And it goes like this. Paper doll cut in another's image, trapped hand in hand on an eternal dance for a child's broken tune. So easy to crumble, forget in a corner, discard without care amongst an ignored pile of dusty fur and ripped up parchment. Another trapped trinket, imprisoned within thoughts under another's rule, desperate for an opportunity to cut themselves free, carve their paper form into a private vision whispered only into the wind, fruitlessly patient for the day where freedom becomes more than a prisoner's wish, when chains are cut and a new kingdom is born, peace at last, life in a better world, seen only in dreams, just out of reach, for a paper doll cut in another's image. End poem. And that was just absolutely, to me, a beautiful, heartfelt write. And Tom, your thoughts?
I thought you were going to do that. The idea of the paper doll right in the beginning, cut in another's image, as if somehow being in her image would make it not good enough. And yet, as she dresses it, discards it, so easy to crumple, forget in the corner, all the things that a child can do, all the ways that you look for opportunities to be more than just what they say you are, another trapped trinket imprisoned within thoughts under another's rule, desperate for an opportunity to cut themselves free. There's a deep and abiding despair in this that at the same time recognizes that we have to be more than a paper doll, more than something cut in somebody else's image. We have to create our own image. It's a very striking piece. I think I'll stop there.
It really is a striking. Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. And yeah, the imagery of someone feeling like a paper doll cut out in somebody else's image, I think really strikes a chord. So excellent comment, Tom. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, this one, I have to say, there's definitely underlying notes in here and thoughts in my mind. That's exactly the way I have to see it. But a paper doll cut in another's image. In other words, you know, you can't be yourself. You have to be what someone else wants you to be. And that in itself is as Tom said, it's a sad note there. You know, it's so easy to crumple and forget in a corner, discard without care among an ignored pile of dusty fur and ripped up parchment. You know, another trapped trinket imprisoned within thoughts under another's rule. You know, to not be allowed to be your own person because someone is holding you back and keeping you, you know, under their thumb, so to speak. You know, it's just, that's a terrible way to, it's bad to feel so oppressed by, you know, whoever, whatever, you know, an individual, society, whatever you want to look at it as. You know, what is it? You know, desperate for an opportunity to cut themselves free. You know, carve your paper form into a private vision, whispered only into the wind. You know, it's a wonderful dream to be able to do that, but it's so sad that someone would have to think like that. You know, to be free is one thing, but to just yearn for it, you know, to long for that. It's hard. It's a hard thing for anyone to swallow. Anyone who's ever felt oppressed in any way, shape, or form can understand that. And just really well, well done, you know, all the way through. And, you know, it's a great work. Just a great work, Alex, and thanks for sharing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I have to agree with you. This is definitely a deeply layered piece. In my comment, my written comment, I had put that it was a heartfelt right on someone who has chained to society's expectations and not free to be themselves. And I think, though, it does touch on that idea, as you were mentioning, that, well, you know, it can be the society's expectations. It could be a family's expectations, a parental figure's expectations, or even friends. And you definitely, I have to agree with you, Jean, there is a strong sense of oppression, of that longing for the freedom to be yourself. You know, and this was wonderful all the way through, but I was particularly struck by the line, fruitlessly patient for the day where freedom becomes more than a prisoner's wish, when chains are cut and a new kingdom is born. You know, and then, you know, just the idea of feeling like your dream, your patience is fruitless, that what you desire most to be, you know, loved and accepted and free to be yourself, it doesn't seem like it will ever happen. So definitely a strong right and very well done. And great comment. All right. And up next we have Birds and Berries by Nan529. And Jean, will you give that a read for us, please?
Hanson, Birds and Berries by Nan529. I thought it was being silly there, but I like it. I like the title. Sing a string of sixpence, a pocket full of rye. Henry sat heavy on his throne, waiting for his prize. 4 and 20 days passed since he chopped off her head. Musicians played green flutes, and courtiers clattered instead. Head chef cooked blackbirds and baked them in a pie. When Henry took out his knife to cut the pie, birds became to sing. Murderer, murderer, you lied. Now wasn't that a dainty dish to put before the king? Henry screamed as he fled. Nightmares plagued him repeatedly in his head. Murder of crows began. Cry out around the bloody tower. The king was in his counting house as Anne whispered, murderer, you lied, in his ear. Queen Jane was in her parlor eating bread and honey. Birds were in the holly bush gobbling up red berries. The maid was in the garden as Anne Boleyn suddenly appeared. The maid picked up her skirts. She became to run. Anne laughed because she was having so much fun. Anne called on the blackbirds who filled up the sky. She spoke quite clear. Now go peck out their eyes. End poem.
Great, Regine. I have to say, I just thoroughly enjoyed this one. I like that she starts us, like she weaves this tale based on the nursery rhyme, Sing a Song of Sixpence. It's almost like she took the idea of the nursery rhyme and expanded it into this tale, you know, using historical figures, you know, obviously like King Henry, Queen Jane, Anne Boleyn. And there's this kind of dark humor within it. At the same time, there's this drama. And you really feel how well she's woven together this classic nursery rhyme and the expanding of dark humor thoughts based on history. And, you know, I have to say I enjoyed this all the way through, but I did like the mention of the murder of crows and cry out around the bloody tower, the mention of the tower where everybody was, you know, where many people, famous people, were locked away. I think that's probably the tower that Jane was locked away in. She was only queen for like 9 days or something like that. I also liked the May picked up her skirt. She began to run and laugh because she was having so much fun. There's something very, I don't know, like the Alice in Wonderland, Wicked Queen type feel to the, those lines to me. And I very much enjoyed this. And Tom, your thoughts?
Well, my friend used to rhyme at me, you know, 4 and 20 Blackbird baked in a pie. The whole thing, all because when you got to the end, where she goes, along came a blackbird, snipped off her nose, she grabbed my nose and pretended she was stealing it, and I make her give it back to me. The things you do when you're 3, 4, 5, you know? It's fun. Think rock. It's about green crack. Tell her to stop that. And at the same time, know the history, a lot of the nursery rhymes were ways to make fun of or report on events in a way that wasn't to fun. Thrown in jail because there wasn't any free press back then. So if you pissed the wrong person off, it bent your head. And she kind of unweaves all the things that were hidden in 4 and 20 Blackbirds and makes it more of a reporting abbreviation. It's very, very dark. And
absolutely.
At the nursery rhyme, and in a way reflecting on how much was hidden within the rhyme.
Yeah, that is a really good point, you know, because like you said, a lot of times the things you had to say had to be hidden because, you know, as you said, if you pissed off the wrong people, you lost your head. And so there was this kind of like as if she took and untied the knot and let the string just come loose. So excellent comment. And Jean, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
You know, I thought it was a clever take on your prompts. And I enjoyed the way that she incorporated the nursery rhyme into the piece. I thought she did a great job and it was very well done. But I think that she really... she kind of nailed it to that prompt, actually. You know, the birds and the berries in the image. And then the piece just kind of came together from there. And I thought it just, man, did a great job. So nice work, man. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, I have to agree. She definitely did nail that prompt. You know, like I like that she looked at that prompt and that's what she saw. So very cool. Very cool. And... all right. And up next we have Enchanted Pages by Blue Right 76. And Tom, will you give that a read for us, please?
Enchanted Pages by Blue Right 76. Car of softest paper. She resided in black, shaded blanks together gel, giving life to her silent calls as she whispers and breathes little secrets into avian ear. Pristine stories, feathers wove, while birds flop into her world. Cats looked on in witness, by gentle murmurs. Carbon queen of soft ecstasy, carve her, feel her fragrance, her soft bird songs in the seeking winds, gushed around in butterfly strokes. Feathered children, hot queen, in dew-picked smiles and bounded pages, when their friendship awoke. She never did fall in love, but she was a child queen. They built castles in wood, where she lived. Queen, be like queen she was.
Wonderful read there, Tom. And I just thought this was a beautiful write by Blue Wright 76. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I have to agree with you, Pam. I thought it was really great. I thought it was a great take on the chosen prompt. You know, she was right there with the images in the paper cutting, and I think that she expressed it really well. Clever, and, you know, she brought in the cats and the birds and, you know, all of that. And I like how she made the woman in there a young queen, you know, a child. I knew I saw it somewhere. And it was just really a nice tale that she put together. Yeah. Great job. Very well done.
Absolutely. And I like that you brought in, like, how she, how Blue Wright brought in the different details. Like, some people, they go on a prompt and they look at the prompt as a whole, and then some people pick out little details. And I think either way is absolutely fine, because it's just a way of individually expressing ourselves. And you can tell with Blue Wright, what they do is they look at an image and the little details, like, what do I see in this image and that I can put into my right? I like how, you know, this spoke to me on the idea of the imagination of children. And, you know, it had such wonderful imagery, and I like the storybook characters created. But I feel like there's, you know, as I read through it again and I'm looking at it, I feel like there's almost this idea of a Pinocchio-type story. I like where she said, where, you know, where it says, like, tied gently by her sweet murmurs, carven queen of soft fantasy, carve her and feel her fragrance, her bird songs and the seeking wind. It's almost to me like the person who created the paper cutting artwork, the particular image, is seen as that woman, that person who longs for someone to keep them company, just like Geppetto. And maybe I'm kind of off the wall here, but just like Geppetto longed for a son and created Pinocchio, this woman creates this child queen, this someone that can forever keep her company, someone who will always stay young and never want to leave. And that, you know, that's just but I, wonderful imagery, beautifully written, and definitely a wonderful write. And Tom, you did an excellent read of that. Your thoughts?
Thanks. I voice here. I like the opening about the car on soft where she resided in the carbon blacks. The person does a wonderful job of a crisis in this and catching all the details and weaving them together to tell a story. But she adds in this interesting part towards the end where she goes, her bird songs and the seeking winds gushed around the butterfly strokes. Clever children, lock the queen. This is the children outside the picture, you know. Lock the queen. And do pick to smile and bounded pages when their friendship evolves. In other words, somehow she has become part of the picture, the entire scene has become part of some child's history. So that the picture, for all the life that is within it, never has an opportunity to be more than the picture it is. And so she never did. She was a child queen. And these children built castles of glass and wood like the queen she was. But somehow, in her time of imagination created by these children, at least that's the way it hits me when I was reading it and looking back on it. beautifully written. It's really captures all the detail within the picture and weaves them into a single story, which in itself is a part of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I like that thought. I really do. And that is one of the just amazing things about poetry and discussing poetry on these shows is hearing, like, two or more people's different thoughts on the same poem. It just, you know, it really just makes my day. Yeah, I'm glad to see that, Gene, that you popped into a Late Night Poets to smile, because I was beginning to think people were looking in there and going, what's up with the Komodo dragon talking to herself?
Oh, my God. I mean, she looked smiling. You're like, what the hell is wrong with these people?
That's all right. Yeah, they all, yeah. Always yeah. Good to have a smile. Always good to have a
Amen.
Smile.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And up next, we have Pot of Gold by Daniel Dischino. And it goes like this. The romance of fantasy and treasure to seek does youth let enter in mind and spirit. And search will all through passion years for treasure troves and dancing dreams. And I lie now towards end of life, too tired for those bright mythic quests. Simple times, my past does glow ahead of family days, reflective nights. And cook the food that I will grow, a garden to bring forth new life, and hot summer days. And cloudless skies, with my own hands, I water the earth. And as the simple droplets fall, a rainbow lives within it all. With rainbow's end from water displayed, the garden of which I myself have made. End poem. He always has a wonderful way with imagery and word choicing. And Tom, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this.
I always enjoy Daniel. the open air, the romance of fantasy, treasure to seek, does you let it enter in mind and spirit? The question there, if you look at the prompt that you used, the picture of a boy standing beneath a tree looking down upon the barn and the farm, as if he had just taken a momentary break from work. And he catches this and searches all through passing years, treasure troves and dancing dreams, and then he becomes a youth himself and talks about his mythic quests and what glows ahead. And cook the food that I will grow, a garden to bring forth new life. And he stops to daydream, thinking about how in dealing with the world that he has, all these wonderful things that will be created. And I love that ending. The simple droplets fall, a rainbow lives within it all. The rainbow's end from water display, the garden of which I myself have made. Taking all that ownership all of a sudden for all the goodness that is displayed. Really lovely piece.
It really is. I have to agree. And I like that you mentioned the idea of taking ownership of all that one has done throughout their lifetime. So, wonderful observation. And Gene, your thoughts?
Well, I had to pop that prompt up into the room. I thought you didn't. It was just an excellent job with that. The tale was told so well to that prompt. You could feel it, you know, you could just pull them together so wonderfully. I thought it was well written and well expressed, and I think that Dan did an excellent job with it. So thank you, Dan. That was a great piece, a great take on that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I'm glad you posted that image in there, because it, you really can, once you look at the image in Late Night Poets and you read the poem side by side, you can see how, you know, it fits with the idea of that journey of life.
Yes.
You know, and so really great comment. And I really like this all the way through, but especially, and I lie now towards end of life, too tired for those bright mystic quests, simple times, my path does glow ahead of family days, reflective night. You know, it's almost like, to me, there's this idea that, speaking of how every portion of life has its purpose, you know, youth is for those mystic quests, you know, and our later years are perhaps more for reflective nights and spending time with family and friends. I really like how there's this kind of this simple joy, this beautiful joy to just appreciating that all life has to offer you. And I really also like, with my own hands I water the earth, and as the simple droplets fall, a rainbow lives within it all. And you realize through the work and perseverance of your life and your mind and your body, you know, there is so much given back to you. And so just, you know, beautifully written and very well done. And all right. And Tom, I know you wrote for the paper cutting contest, and we will definitely be getting to your right. I'm just going to do a SoundCloud by IND, one other one from the summer picnic, and then it'll be your turn to read again, so then we'll get to your right.
Okay.
All right. So up next we have The Offering by Diane D, and we have a SoundCloud for that, Phil.
Okay.
The Offering by Diane D. Father Woods, I offer you a picnic of regard for your agility in nature, your gifts to the forest, and gentility for its creatures. Not just Switzerland's finest Gruyere cheeses, nor the red fruit flower aroma of a Burgundy Pinot Noir, a man's pride, a parachute linen sheet. But I offer a drink from sunrays, so that your brambles dance limber in oak ball gowns, until the wee hours of a sleeping beauty sleep. I offer the sun's heat, the kind of warmth that teases your bare bark, begging your trunk wriggle to wind's flute symphony. I offer nutritious rains to cleanse your boughs of smoke, while clenching a charcoal thirst plaguing the woods during man's rest time. Finally, I offer you time to heal during fall, winter, and spring, so that you might rekindle. I shall return when spring calls and man awakens. End poem.
Wonderful read and write there, Diane. And she was the gold winner in the contest, the quote contest, Among the Delights of Summer, or Picnic to the Woods. And I liked how she took the prompt and the idea of an offering up to the Father of the Woods, to nature. I thought this had amazing imagery and metaphors. It was beautiful. It was heartfelt. You really felt the thankfulness. You felt the reverence in this. You felt this was told from a perspective that knew that what the woods offered them, and in return wanted to offer something in return. And, you know, I like that she says, I offer you, it's beautiful all the way through, but to start, I offer you a picnic of regard for your agility in nature, your gift to the forest, and genuine gentility for its creature. I offer the sun's heat, the kind of warmth that teases your bare bark, begging your trunk wriggle to wind's flute symphony. There's such a wonderful personification of nature, of the movement of the woods, and everything that nature has to offer, and the kind of, in return, the kind of reverence that we can offer up to nature, and a certain, there to me was definitely a sense of respect in this, and I truly appreciated this all the way through. And I like the mention of cleanse your vows of smoke while quenching a charcoal thirst plaguing the wood during man's wrecked time. There is this acknowledgement that violence happens, that destruction happens, and that nature is sadly at times taken down by it, but then renewed. So I thought this was a beautiful rite all the way through and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
You're talking, you had me?
I was talking to Jean and I think she's on mute.
I did. I muted myself for the damn audience like I always do. I don't know why I do it, but I do. I thought this was a lovely piece. Great imagery and wonderful take on the prompt. Very well expressed, and I really enjoyed it a lot. And I'm glad to hear she won the gold. Good for you, Diane. Go for it. Go, go, girl, go. That's what I was going to say. Just really nice.
Absolutely. It really is. I have to agree. Excellent comment. And Tom, your thoughts?
Well, I find myself listening to this, trying to be clear about who the speakers were. I finally realized that, you know, it's Mother Nature speaking to Father Woods. And while she recognizes the interplay and effect of a man's pride, her shoeless and sheep, and the humans, action, it's really about her telling Father Woods how much she appreciates him and interacts with him and recognizes and shares gifts with her, so that it really takes on a mystical, magical, sort of wonderful expression. How the seasons and all the things in nature that are part of the seasons, affected by the seasons, come together to give us a wonderful experience in this world. It's really very beautiful.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you're right. It is a interweaving, a kind of a like a conversation between Mother Nature and Father Woods, and the acknowledgement of all that the old Father Woods does, and how, you know, that personification of Mother Nature. So really great observations there. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, hang on, I got lost. I lost myself.
Uh-oh.
Diane D, I just commented on her, sweetheart.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Remember I was on mute?
Oh, Jean.
Yeah. Okay.
I am so sorry. Okay. That's my bad.
Okay.
You were found. I was the one that was lost. Okay. All right. Well, up next we have Heaven's Picnic by S. Sharp. And Jean, will you give that a read for us, please?
Sure thing. Heaven's Picnic by S. Sharp. The spot, a misty Heaven's Picnic by S. Sharp. The spot amidst the aspen colors my eyes green and yellow and gold. Like heaven cleared it for us, along the whispering love of Connor Creek. the Ogallala's dance of nature's stage. No past foot beating to allow to follow. Just beauty leads us to a picnic amongst the heavens, along a bed of blue columbines made for the gods. We repose like the angels to eat amongst the rainbow in the sky and the calm.
Wonderful, Rita D. And, yeah, this one just is beautiful imagery. And Tom, your thoughts?
Well, it definitely is Kevin's picnic. And she does a wonderful job of, at first, just giving us the scene, the you know, like having cleared it for us along the whispering love of Kevin. Before we find any kind of presentation, we find all the gifts that are laid out before them as a picnic, without even realizing who this is. And in the end, in a sense, it can only be my mind, the dyads and features of the wood, the little godless, the picnic amongst the heavens, along a bed of blue columbines made for the gods to repose like the angels to eat amongst the rainbows of the sky. Beautiful, beautiful imagery.
Oh, I have to agree with you. It's beautiful imagery. What I like is, there's just certain places you visit in your lifetime that just speak to your spirit. And you feel like as if, if there's an earthly representation of heaven, it is in that moment. And I think it's different for all of us. But, and to me this was very beautiful, simple, straightforward imagery. And it captured that those colors that the eyes see, a bed of blue columbines made for the gods, we repose like angels to eat amongst rainbows in the sky. I like how this is that idea of both an earthly picnic and a heavenly picnic. And I also was particularly drawn to the no path but beaten to follow, just beauty lead us. That idea of not wandering those man-made paths, but rather the paths that are set by our own spirit. So beautifully written and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
Yeah, that was beautiful work. Fabulous imagery, and I really enjoyed the poem. I love these last lines. Just beauty leads us to a picnic amongst the heavens, along a bed of blue columbines made for the gods. We repose like the angels to eat amongst the rainbows in the sky. I love how he ended this piece, how he pulled it together in the end and tied it up with a bow. Nice work, Scott. So thanks a lot for sharing.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. He did tie it up nicely together at the end. So great comment. Mm-hmm. And all right, Tom, I've got your poem up. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
What? You've got within me. It is the weight, the feel, a sense of the fiber, how it reflects life, how it will hold the cut. If it needs paper, or is it better to let the light come through? You fold half or quarters. What does it tell you? You listen in the quiet. Tantalizes, speaks to your core. The tool to begin has its own language. There is a conversation. Your fingers listen more than direct. Story begins. Refold or simply address detail. Each question finds its answer. Your great gift is both in thinking listening and following direction. The art is patient to ensure each movement has purpose. Each time, speak the correct language. I'm you, mountain. What is revealed brings peace to what inside has been listening and hoping. You could share what it heard loudly enough for others to hear. People are impressed by it, amazed by patterns created. The balance folding before cutting creates the wonderful way voids and fills spaces speak. You, in fact, you were able to receive. And
wonderful reader, Tom. You know, I really like how for the paper cutting art contest, you were inspired by the general spirit of the contest and paid tribute to the artwork, the process of paper cutting art itself. And that line, those beginning lines, what comes first, the cut or the image? It is the paper, the weight, the feel, a sense of the fiber. And you remind us that this paper is made out of all these crushed fibers put together, and that we really need to be in tune with what this blank canvas is offering up to us. It kind of makes me think of earlier today. I was talking with Jean, and we were chit-chatting about how like people like, you know, like Leonardo da Vinci carved the statue of David out of a single block of marble, and how someone can take a single block of marble and bring out the artwork, how someone can, you know, take a single piece of paper and a cutting tool and just take time to really converse with the fiber of its being and have the artwork brought out. And I really like how you remind us that the importance of the artist being in tune with the paper and the cutting tool, because, you know, the paper cutting art is not done without a cutting tool, but the cutting tool needs the hands to move it, you know. I really like how your wonderful attention to detail, you unfold and the story begins, refold or simply address detail. Each question finds its answer. And again, another great point in the idea with the paper cutting art, that the number of folds that you do affects how your image will come out. Is it going to be a dual image? Is it going to be like four of the same image? And really, all the way through, this is a beautiful tribute to the artwork. And I think that was just an ending that wrapped up everything so nicely. You give thanks you were able to receive. You know, I feel like, and I am not good at when it comes to drawing or painting or anything, but, you know, I like fooling around with, like, I have watercolor pencils that I like fooling around with. And they're just something very meditative, very spiritual about art and about the giving and the receiving. So wonderful right here, Tom. Very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, Thomas, I have to say, I thought this was an excellent take on the art itself. I loved how you spoke to the artist's point of view, and I thought it was an incredible piece. I very much enjoyed it. You really, when you wrote, I mean, as if you had actually done this art. It gave you that real feeling that you knew exactly what you were talking about. you know, I guess maybe some people would say, well, art is art, you know. I saw that you said you did a lot of prep, you know, to get ready to write. And, you know, maybe it is a similar kind of thought process, but I think that you really spoke to that wonderfully. So nice work, and thanks for sharing with us.
Well, you know, I don't know about you, but back when we used to do everything with pen and paper, I used to be really picky about the pen that I would use to write with, because it really affected the way things moved and were shaped on the page and the way the letters showed up. And later on, I took the calligraphy. That drove it home even more, you know, that the pen really affected your thoughts and how you wrote. I love Michelangelo, which was asked, you know, how he created what he created. He said, all I do is stare at the stone until I've seen its soul and then remove the excess.
That's always
something. Oh, beautiful. Very cool. I like that. Well, yeah, thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. And I'm glad you were inspired, and I'm glad you were able to call in. Thank you for that.
Yeah, well, I like to read my own stuff, and I really try to do this. It's just that if I've got to get up at 6 and 7 in the morning, I can't stay up. It's just impossible.
Oh, I understand that.
But you guys take care, because I am the alphabet, because I got to get up early enough to run around and get some things done before we have to do other things, and life goes on. You know how it is.
Oh, yes.
Have a good night.
All right. Well, you have a good night, Tom, and take care.
Okay. You guys, too. I really appreciate it. You have a wonderful evening.
Okay. We'll hear you again soon, I hope. Take care.
All right. And up next, we have Starting a Tradition by Darkened Auras, and it goes like this. Some of the better dog days of summer were spent hiking into the woods and setting up a picnic with the family. Mom always packed the goods. Peanut butter sandwiches for my siblings, but because of my peanut allergy, she packed a tuna salad sandwich, my favorite, just for me. There were always fresh baked cookies. You know, I can still taste the smell. Cinnamon strudel and lemon wedges, my mouth waters with each inhale. Today's our one-year anniversary, and since we'll soon have a new addition, I've got a spot in the woods and packed a picnic so that we can start our own tradition. End poem. And beautiful, right, by Darkened Auras. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I thought this was a great write. It spoke to that family tradition of going on picnics together. And I think that a lot of people have that experience. I never did. And from what I see in the other's notes, neither did Darkened Auras. But, you know, it's something that we can relate to for different reasons, whether we've seen it in the movies or new people that did it or however it worked, you know. We picked up on that. And it always looks like such a fun and wholesome way to, you know, spend an afternoon. And, you know, right down to the fact that because of my peanut allergies, you know, she packed a tuna salad sandwich. I mean, it made this all so believable. You know, the fresh baked cookies, a lot of real fine details, you know, that make it just seem so, so real. But I love the ending of this. Today's our one-year anniversary, and since we'll soon have a new edition, I've got a spot in the woods and packed a picnic so we can start our own tradition. I thought that was great. You know, it's like taking that concept of, you know, traditions and carrying it forward. I mean, it was a great old poem. I thought it was very wholesome and nice. I liked it very much.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's true, you don't have to write a poem that's 100% based on truth in order for it to, you know, hit on some basic truth. And because, as you said, you know, you've never really been on a picnic in the woods. you know, darkened auras, as she says in her AN. None of this is true. I don't think I've ever been on a picnic, but it was fun to think and write about. I like that she had fun thinking about it and writing about it. And that, you know, she had wonderful attention to detail, great rhyme and flow. And to me, the truth that she hits on and that's universal is it is a wonderful thing to have family traditions that that make you feel good and that you want to pass on to the next generation because it brought you joy and then you want it to bring your children joy. You know, now that was for me one of the great things about having quite a few years of a childhood living in the middle of the woods is there was a lot of picnics in the woods, you know, and oftentimes it was just, you know, because that was back obviously when, you know, things were slightly more relaxed and, you know, we'd be scrounging for whatever we could find. Sometimes, you know, we'd even just, yeah, we'd go out in the woods and pick berries and make that part of the picnic. You know, so yeah, I really hope someday that Darkened Auras does get to go on a picnic. I hope, you know, even if it's just to like a park, I hope she gets to pack that picnic basket of all of her favorite foods and just lay a blanket down on the grass and just enjoy herself. Because it really is. There's something about fresh air. I think fresh air is one of the best seasonings for food. So, you know, wonderful write here. Yep, wonderful write and very well done. And let's see what we got next. All right. All right, up next we have A Simple Joy by Giliate. And Jean, will you give that a read for us, please?
I will give it a try. A Simple Joy by Giliate. To go for a picnic is a simple joy. All it needs is you and me, some picnic snack, well thought and stacked. The more we are, the more fun it can be. For a child resides in each of us, looking forward to go somewhere far from realities and hassles of everyday life. A picnic in woods would be a delightful treat. Pack some lemonade or fruit juice. Get your badminton racket too. A ball, light to play pass in the path. A good time to capture us free from all gadgets new. A picnic is a simple joy, most accessible to all. But it takes a simple mind and happy soul to plan a picnic far or near, to have a together time with you near and dear. A picnic is always a delightful thought and bestows joy to all going for one. And home.
Wonderful read there, Jean. I think the title of this poem says it all, A Simple Joy. And, I thought this was a wonderful write on how, going on a picnic can serve multiple purposes. It can be bonding time with family and friends, and it can be the idea of escaping the stress of everyday life. Perhaps, you know, you have the weekend off or after a long day of work. And to me, you know, this poem really spoke to me all the way through, but particularly what I liked was that third stanza where she mentions the, get your badminton racket too, a ball light to pass back and to play pass and pass the pass. I'm not sure if that was supposed to be grass, but I don't know. But that's not a game I know, but I know that oftentimes, like, if you have family picnics, family reunions, company picnics, or just getting together with friends, picnics aren't just always about the food, you know, they're about the activities that you're sharing together. So I like that she brings that up. And I like also in that same stanza that she brings up a good time to capture us free from all gadgets new. Because, you know, God bless technology, you know. I don't know what I would do without it. And it definitely is a blessing. But at the same time, we need to learn to pull ourselves away from it and to interact in other ways. So really just a delightful write all the way through. And, you know, I like that she reminds us that, you know, in one way or another, a picnic can be accessible to everyone. So very well done. And Jean, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
You know, I thought she did a great job here. A perfect nod to how the simple things in life can bring the most joy. It was nice imagery throughout, and I thought it was just nicely penned. I really enjoyed it. So great job, Jeff. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I have to agree. So great comment there. All right. Up next, we have A Creature on a Picnic and by Julie Buck, and it goes like this. I'm a creature on a picnic. Table manners, I say gooey. When I am into chowing, I get a little gooey. My eyes bug out with pleasure, the madness with the munchies. I save the bones for last. They are my favorite crunchies. Let me eat in peace. I'm a freak and I'm a ghoul. Offer me no napkin as I prefer to drool. So what if I disgust you? I'd rather dine alone. Human cake is my dessert. I will gnaw all until I moan. It's best just let me be a grisly skeleton right on track. When my belly bloats and bursts, my pointed ears turn black. I am not your troll to judge. I simply need to feast. To devour brains and smelly gook, I am a nasty little beast. The satisfying irony is you say you're kind and pretty, but all I ever see is ugly, mean, and dirty. Now disappear, you watcher, you, I believe I need to crap. Then like all that's foul before me, I will take a noxious nap. End poem. I have to say, you know, this is a different take on the prompt, for sure. I like it. I don't see Julie writing in rhyme too much, so I like that she did something different. And just, oh my goodness, kind of fun and twisted humor that I very much enjoyed. And Dean, your thoughts?
Oh my God. I loved every second of this. I enjoyed every bit that you read. I'm looking at it and I'm going, well, go Julie. Just go Julie. I mean, it was great.
Where'd you go? Jean, did you accidentally mute yourself? Because I can't hear you. Did I accidentally mute myself? No. Okay. All right. Well, let me tell Jean I can't hear her. I don't know. Maybe she can hear me. But I will let her know that. And then I will go ahead and comment and see what happens from there. All right. Yes, as Jean was starting to say, this is wonderful all the way through. Love the humor. Love that you bring us into this life of this troll. You know, wonderful rhyme and flow. And I love that this is about someone who it's not just a fantastic story about a creature, a troll, but rather a fantastic, story about someone who embraces their own gluttony and their love for food and doesn't care what anybody thinks. All right. And Jean, can I hear you now?
Me. It's at the same time of night. Every night at 11:50 or 47, my phone hangs up one night. I don't understand
it,
but it's clockwork now. Anyway, I thought that this was I thought it was fun. I thought it was different. I thought it was very different for Julie. I agree with you. I don't think I've ever really seen her write anything like this. But it was excellent and it was fun. I think I said fun like four times. I can't help myself. I mean, I was hanging on every word when you were reading it, you know, and I wanted to read ahead, but then I was like, no, hang on. Stay with Pam. I didn't want to miss anything, you know. But definitely a great job, Julian. I loved it. I really loved it. I thought it was a great take on your picnic prompts, Pam.
It was fun. You know, you did say that more than once, but it's a perfect word to describe it. It's like she just had fun with this prompt and with the rhyme and with the imagery. So excellent comment there. And all right, let's see what we got next. All right. And up next we have The Last Summer Picnic by Truth Chills. And Jean, will you give that a read for us, please?
Okay, okay. The Last Summer Picnic by Truth Chills. My feet fly over the long reeds of grass, running with the heavy picnic basket. I look to my right. I see my eldest child wrapped in a blanket, as if she were a superhero, shouting, "To the woods, my lady." I hesitated a bit, looked toward the looming trees, and said, "Wouldn't it be better to sit out in the open where you can play with your friends?" At that very moment, my three younger sons come to play along. "But, Mom, it's so cool in here. We can dig and find treasures, jewels for you." I cave in and respond, "Okay, but not too far in, right on the edge where the grass is still soft and cool. Remember, we can't stay too long tomorrow. We have school." Satisfied with my answer, I find myself alone to set up the food I brought from home. I lay out the blanket that has been passed down a few generations, smiling at the memories it brings. I reach for the basket, praying that I didn't jostle it too much, for fear that my potato salad would now be mush. Now, about 3 o'clock, and the wind has picked up a bit, I holler for the children to come eat. An eerie silence echoes to me again. I call out, this time firmer, using complete first names. I turn towards rustling leaves to see them running to me, an unrecognized look on their faces as they sat, each to recount the story. We ran for a while playing tag until Maggie grabbed my hand a little too hard. I was about to yell out, "Hey," when I looked her way, she looked like she saw a monster and it was coming this way. We all ducked out of sight when we heard, clear as day, "Yes, Majesty, all the woods creatures are ready to hibernate. Each one to its own space." "Very good," came the reply. I hate bidding someone goodbye. As they turned around to fly off, the king looked back to our hiding spot. He winked as if to say, "Have a good day," and poem.
Wonderful read there. And another write that delves into the mythology of the woods. And I like that. I like that she brings us into a story that starts out in the realm of reality and the idea of a mother and kid taking a picnic in the woods together. And I lay out the blanket that has been passed down a few generations, smiling at the memories it brings. The love, the enthusiasm, the passing down of memories. And then it's so very brief, but such an important part of the tale and the end, where all of a sudden they're witnessing these mystical creatures, these mystical beings going into hibernation. And I liked that wink at the end, that conversation they overhear, and the king looking back to our hiding spot, he winked as if to say, "Have a good day." And you know what, the thing I like about a poem like this, it's wonderful storytelling, first of all, great use of the interaction between characters. But it's not only that it's one of those poems to me that stands well on its own, and yet at the way she ends it, you could see more stories being created. I could see more stories about this mother and these three young children as they get to know the mystical creatures that live in the woods near their house. So I think that's excellent write and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, you know, I thought this was a tale well told. An awesome story, great imagery, and I love the use of detail throughout. And I really enjoyed it very much. And I want to thank you, Maria, for sharing with us tonight. It was a great piece. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
great storyline.
Absolutely. And we have two poems left, but I'm only going to fit in one, and the other one I'll carry over to another show because it's quite a bit longer. So our last poem for the night will be Summer Picnic by Cedar Chapman. And it goes like this. Two rusty leaves rock in a ritual dance as they twirl in summer eddies. Cottonweed falls like snow, blending old memories of cuddling on nippy winter nights. A warm gust carries honeysuckle. Its sweet scent wakes willow leaves to gently brush chrome handlebars resting against a tree. Ants and bees explore a wicker basket. A silky Chardonnay waits patiently, bathing in sunlight, breathing, sweating. Linen trousers and a summer dress waltz alone on a limoncello pasture, caught in a lover's whirlwind like two rusty leaves. Legs and arms intertwine on a serrate blanket as fingers stroke hair and trace jawline. Soft whispers and giggles meld with chirping robins and sparrows while silver pond ripples caress the shoreline. Welcoming summer sighs and blissful memories and poem. And I thought this was absolutely beautifully written. I really enjoy Cedar's poetry. I think they've got a wonderful use of imagery. I like that this has a very romantic and delicately sensual feeling. I like that she brings in the attention to detail, like the warm gust carries honeysuckle, its sweet scent wakes willow leaves. And then it becomes not just about the imagery, but about the sound and the movement and the memories created. And Cedar had actually written this for the contest, but the contest had closed and there was 8 spots only. And I did not want to, like, I thought it was a beautiful poem, but Cedar was nice enough to understand that I did not want to decide who would be the one person not to place in the contest. But I am glad, very glad they were inspired. A wonderful write, like I said, very romantic and you know, ethereal in its feeling. So, and Jean, your thoughts on this lovely poem?
You know, all through this poem, from beginning to end, it was imagery upon imagery upon imagery. You know, it starts out with two rusty leaves locked in a ritual dance. You know, warm gusts carrying honeysuckle smell, you know, the scent. To me, that's imagery. I'm sorry. You know, and it just carries it. Willow leaves, you know, gently brushing chrome handlebars, resting against the tree. Bees and ants exploring with her. It's just full of movement and imagery, and it's just a wonderful piece. It really is. I think that it just was very, very well done. Just very well done. And I thought that it was a great take on your prompt. So great job, and thank you very much, Cedar Chapman. Really enjoyed this piece.
Absolutely, absolutely. And wonderful show tonight, Jean. I'd like to say thank you, as always, for being my co-host and for everything you do. Thank you to Tom for calling in. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And this has just been a wonderful lineup of poetry. And Jean, anything you'd like to say in closing?
No, Pam, it was a great night tonight. I'm glad you guys pulled all your carryovers together. It was a good show. It was a lot of fun. Lots of great poetry. If you want, you can put that last poem on Friday night. And that way, you know, you don't have to find another space for it. Open poetry works there. And great job tonight. And, hey, it was fun. Yeah, for the three of us, you know, you, me, and Thomas. It's always good to have Thomas around. You know, he's a great reader and a great commenter. And, you know, we'll harass everybody tomorrow.
It was fun.
And thank you very much. Great job. And thanks for all you do.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too, hon. Night. Much love, everybody.